This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
Welcome to the Kings of Sport, the program that's changing the game one show at a time, with your hosts, Nate Milton.
Yes! That boy's good!
And Marcus Vandenberg.
Let's say!
So sit back and relax, because you're now down with the Kings.
And welcome to the Kings of Sport, the program that's changing the game one show at a time, a.k.a. the world's most dangerous sports show, a.k.a. iTunes' longest-running weekly episodic sports program, hosted and produced by two or more African-Americans. I am the Godfather, Nate Milton, joined as always by my partner in crime, Marcus Vandenberg. What is going on, Marcus? Have you awakened from your turkey-induced coma?
I have finally. Several days later, I am up and functional and ready to go.
All right, good to know that the tryptophan didn't harm the podcast. But before we get into all of our great topics this week, we got a lot of good stuff going on in the program this week. We will talk some NFL. We're going to talk some ratchetness in segment four, and of course, we will touch upon two big podcast that took place in the world of wrestling over the past 7 days. But before we get into that, how was your Thanksgiving, man?
It was good. I spent it with my fiance's family, and it wasn't my first time, so it wasn't that awkward whole filling out process. They've come to know me at this point, so it wasn't bad at all.
Okay,
what about
cool.
Yourself?
Cool, yeah, my Thanksgiving was good. I worked a couple days last week, and then I had this long midweek break from, let's see, I was off Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, and then I came back like 8 a.m. Saturday, which is like, that's the setup right there. Mm. Like, you can't have me off 3 days and then have me come in at 8 o'clock on a Saturday. I think I finally stumbled into work about 8:15, 8:20. Like, hey, you knew what was going to happen. Like, don't blame me for what you knew was about to occur. But, yeah, Thanksgiving was cool. I had some good times with the fam and some good friends and ate too much. But, you know, I'm trying to work it out. I'm trying to work it off, Marcus, because, you know, I'm probably going to eat a lot at Christmas. But then after that, man, I got to get my workout plan on because I did, for those of you that was wondering, based off of last week's podcast, I did sign up for tagmeadate.com.
All right.
So, you know, I got to get in shape for these Marquettes out here on these streets. But, yeah, so I signed up, and then I'll give you some more insight the more I delve into the rabbit hole of the website that is tagmeadate.com. But just kind of first impressions, the questionnaire was very interesting. Like, and you know how most dating sites will ask you, like, your you know, religion and do you like pets? Do you want kids? You know, what's your ideal first date? Stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
Well, Tag Me a Date, they ask, the first question is, who's your favorite wrestler? Then it's, who's your favorite tag team?
Hmm.
What's your favorite wrestling saying? What is your favorite manager? And what is your earliest memory of pro wrestling?
Let's see, favorite wrestler. All right, Shawn Michaels. New Age Outlaws. What was the third question?
Your wrestling saying.
What?
Earliest
wrestling memory?
Yeah.
I was watching the 1993 Royal Rumble. It was my first pay-per-view.
Okay, and your favorite manager?
Oh, Bobby Heenan.
Okay. So mine was, I put, of course, my favorite wrestler, Sting.
Mm-hmm.
My tag team, I put the Midnight Express.
Such a southerner, man.
Yes. Very, excuse, very, very Crockett Promotions in my list. In terms of my saying, I was, you didn't know your ass, better call somebody. my tag team, I mean, my manager was, I had Jim Cornette and Sherry Martel.
Okay.
And then for my earliest memory, it was watching Sting and Flair at the Clash of the Champions. Like, my parents allowed me to stay up that night.
The first one?
Yep, which is going to be reviewed on a
this week
broadcast note, reviewed by our friends over at Review Away, John Pollock and Wade Ting. They'll be reviewing the Clash of the Champions with Sting and Flair as your main event and Jason Hervey serving as a judge for some damn reason.
I watched that show last week. That's one weird show. It really shows it shows its age. You're like, wow, this streams 1980s.
Like, yeah, Jason Hervey's still getting them checks, man.
What a mark.
So yeah, so we'll see what Tag Me a Date has to offer, and I'll be giving you guys periodic updates, and then we'll have Steve back on at the end of the free trial, because you know, I love Steve and all, you know, appreciate him coming on the show, but you know, I don't think I'll be signing up for the Cruiserweight package.
Have you made any contact with any of the women, or and vice versa?
Well, my initial observation is that, and it's no fault of Steve or anybody at the site, is that you can see where the clumps of people are located.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's very big city heavy right now, I guess I would say. And you can see the hubs, like the Flair Country, like there's a big group of the people from Charlotte, I guess, and, you know, a big group of the people in Chicago, New York, D.C., whatever. But in terms of me, you know, Newport News, like, I'm getting hits from, like, Richmond, Roanoke, a couple people in my immediate area. But, like, it's probably about a 2 or 3 hour radius in terms of the hits I'm getting.
Mm-hmm.
And I've had a couple matches. It's very interesting because it's like, there's no rhyme or reason beyond those five questions that they ask you. Why your match, like the five questions they ask you and where you live and your age range. Those are the things that like set up the matches.
Hmm.
So it's going to be interesting. So I'll keep you guys posted and let you know whether this thing turns out to be Brock Lesnar or whether it turns out to be the New Day, which we'll talk about later.
Oh boy.
But, Marcus, it is the holiday season, and I think it's time, in that spirit of giving and that spirit of joy, that we bring back one of our more underrated segments of the show. And since it is the holiday season, I decided to give you a gift, and I created some new theme music, some new imaging for this particular segment. It's where we go to the ice and talk about America's fourth favorite sport. Fifth favorite sport?
Ooh,
sixth favorite sport?
Do you count UFC as a sport?
Because we're talking about the NHL, and that means it is time for Marcus's Hockey Minute, a.k.a. Ask a Hockey Negro.
It's time for the segment that's cooler than a polar bear's toenail.
Gives the puck to Seth Jones. Leg one for Jones. Coming up, he scores!
It's Marcus's Hockey Minute, a.k.a. Ask a Hockey Negro.
Alright, alright, alright. You're gonna learn today.
You're too kind for the new intro. Too kind.
I was bored. I mean, I had 3 days off, so I had to do something.
Yes, the Hockey Negro Minute is back. And originally when I pinged you about this, I had this great little nugget that was going to surprise votes. And then the NHL decided to release their updated All-Star fan voting results like 10 minutes ago. So originally when I had this idea, my favorite Canadian hockey player, PK Subban, was the leading vote getter out of all players in the first round of the All-Star fan vote. But after week two, a guy out of Buffalo, whose name I'm going to butcher, Zemeckis, Jurgensen's.
I'm gonna let you have that one.
Is now the leading vote getter by a good margin. And just doing a quick Google search, because Buffalo is pretty bad this year. I was trying to figure out how this guy, and he's not that, I mean, he's a good player, but he's not, you know, Sidney Crosby. But I'm guessing, I looked it up, and he's from Latvia, and the people in Latvia have been stuffing the ballots over there. So this guy,
so this is like a Yao Ming
situation. It is a Yao Ming situation, because he, the second highest vote getter at the moment is PK Subban at 240,000 votes. Our dude from Latvia has 400,000 votes. So they've really stuffed the ballots in a week. I guess that whole Thanksgiving thing doesn't really apply to them over there. So they've been busy. So currently a guy on a pretty awful team is now your leading vote getter in the NHL. So, and then one quick other story from the National Hockey League. Kings defenseman Slava Voynov, who was suspended indefinitely for after his domestic assault incident in October, he was in court on Monday. He pled not guilty. On Tuesday, he took the ice in practice with the Los Angeles Kings. And at first, people were a little confused because the dude is suspended, and they were trying to figure out what exactly was going on. And about an hour later, the NHL released a statement saying the Kings were fined $100,000 for allowing Slava to practice with the team this morning. I guess it goes against the whole year suspended situation, which makes sense. So I hope it was worth it. It's one expensive practice for Slava Voynov, and for actually for the Kings. It's not costing Slava any. It's costing the Kings. So.
I don't know how that works.
With the whole practice thing?
Yeah, what's the gain? What's the benefit for the Kings? I mean, obviously you want this guy on the roster, but you know, if you know you're gonna get hit for that fine, you know, what's the benefit to the LA Kings?
Well, there was a tweet earlier that said basically the Kings wanted him to like spend some time with the boys and, you know, just sort of clear his mind. And they took full responsibility for what happened. They took the blame and said it was, you know, our fault. We shouldn't have let it happen. But, yeah, I mean, you got to know the rules better than that. And the NHL wasted no time. It literally took them maybe 90 minutes to get that fine out and serve the team. So they don't play around.
Bettman was like, no, man, you ain't going to get me with that Roger Goodell.
Yeah, nah. Write that check.
But getting back to the All-Star vote, that was interesting because you – sent me the message on Facebook, and I was like, okay. And I was thinking, going back to our previous installments of Ask a Hockey Negro, I was thinking somehow that it was Seth Jones.
Oh. No, you know, Seth has not really made that next step yet. I mean, he's still pretty young. But he is not – I don't say he's not lived up to expectations, but he is not the superstar – caliber player just yet. He's only 20, so I'm sure he'll get there at some point. But no, he's not there yet.
All right, so we got the second place vote getter,
PK. Who he's got more votes than Sidney Crosby, Patrick Kane. And the other thing I noticed about this fan voting stuff, it's really you can tell which teams are actually going out to vote the fan base. Chicago has five players in the top 10, so. I feel like the NBA is a little bit more balanced when it comes to their fan voting, but NHL is just like, you know, whoever has the most passionate fan base at the moment, they'll get the guys on the team.
To me, no one does it better and is more blatant than baseball.
Oh, yeah.
So if you go to a baseball stadium, like during the All-Star voting process, and they'll put the little ballots in with the program and the announcer will come on, don't forget while you're here, because we used to go to a lot of Orioles games in Baltimore. You got to be like, don't forget to vote for your Baltimore Orioles for the All-Star team. And then I'm like, no, I'm not. Mickey Tettleton doesn't deserve to be on this damn team. Like, I don't care what kind of peer pressure you're trying to push me into. Like, Cal Ripken is there, and maybe Brady Anderson. Other than that, none of the rest of you guys deserve to be there.
You can vote 25 times. That was the other thing, too. Was it really 25 times?
Yeah, it's – I don't know. I think – I don't know whether the Major League Baseball and the NBA has a better process, but I think just because the MLB process is so ingrained with the fans, and then you add in the aspect of voting online, and then they added the second chance player a couple years ago.
Yeah,
they added that to the mix. So I think it might not be the best system, but it's probably the most accessible system.
And the whole every team must have a player represented on the team. That part I don't like, because you always get the one guy who has no business being there, but he's got to go.
See, I used to like that when they let them wear their own uniforms.
Uh-huh.
When everybody wore their team uniforms, I thought that was a cool idea. But now that they've got, you know, the National and the American League All-Star uniforms, like, I'm just like, eh.
Yeah.
But back in the day when it was like everybody gets a player and you see some random dude in the old school Philadelphia Phillies uniform come out, it's like, is that Von Hayes? Shout out to Von Hayes. Although where that repressed memory came from, that I just remembered a random Von Hayes who I just looked up. Von Hayes is 56. So we're getting old, Marcus.
How old is Charlie Hayes?
Oh, how old do you think Charlie Hayes is?
I just looked. He's 49.
I just looked it up too. Yeah. Just random 80s and 90s baseball players to me are some of the most fascinating people, because it's like, where the hell are they?
Charlie Hayes.
Like anybody seen Mark Lemke in the last 10 years?
Yeah, no.
where the hell is Sid Bream at?
Good old baseball.
So that was Ask a Hockey Negro, a.k.a. Baseball Randomness, a.k.a. Marcus's Hockey Minute. So Merry Christmas to everybody that asked for more hockey on this show. Shout out to G. Hall, a frequent listener, north of the border. But, I don't know if we'll get one next week. But, I made this theme song now, so it's like,
might as well use it. Yeah.
Yeah. It's kind of like when Alfred and I were doing the Olympics in the summer.
Oh, that's right.
Or was it the winter? Was it the Winter Olympics?
Yeah.
It was the Winter Olympics. Yeah. Cause we did the Cool Runnings theme.
Yeah.
It was like, we barely talked about the Olympics, but I spent 30 minutes making this song. So we're going to talk about the Olympics. And it ended up being all Lolo Jones talk pretty much. So that's a whole nother topic for another day. but we got some pretty good stuff on this week's show, Marcus.
We have a guest this week.
Yes, we do. So if football is your bag, in particular the fantasy variety, I'm sure you will not want to miss Second Down. It's been a very interesting week. We might talk about our very own league, the Briscoe Sanders Football League, powered by the Kings of Sport, where there's been a lot of moving and shaking, man, the last couple weeks.
Yeah, we'll discuss that in that segment.
Yeah, yes, we will. Yes, we will. So we got that coming up. We've got some wrestling talk coming up. And, of course, the always anticipated segment 4. So stick and stay. Big show on the Kings of Sport this week. And we'll be back right after this.
Hustle Gang's gonna be there for Shizzle.
What in the wide, wide world of sports is going on here?
It's time to talk about the sport of kings with the Kings of Sport. It's your pigskin preview, your gridiron gabfest, and your weekly football focus It's time for Second Down on the Kings of Sport.
It's the sport of kings, better than diamond rings. That's why we're here to sing football. Sunday in the snow, referees whistle blows. Weekend warriors toe to toe.
We are back on the Kings of Sport, and if you're hearing that music, it must mean it is time for Second Down, our weekly football focus, where we talk about collegiate football, the National Football League, and perhaps more most importantly, especially this week, fantasy football. And this week, like Marcus alluded to, in the A Block, we got a guest to talk about this. So, Brother Marcus, why don't you let the people know who we got joining in on the conversation this week?
Yeah, this week we have a long-time friend of mine and someone who's currently the NFL.com fantasy editor, Marcus Grant. Marcus, what's up, man?
Not much, man. Good to be on the show. You talk about being longtime friends. You reminded me that you were in my car listening to the Q-Tip Amplified CD just after it came out. But it just celebrated, what, its 15th anniversary or something like that?
1990. I'll give you a quick story about how far me and Marcus go back. So Marcus used to take me out of school, at high school, to go to Dodger games. We went to opening day, it must have been, what, 2000 maybe?
It was Ken Griffey Jr.'s first game with the Cincinnati Reds.
That's right, yeah. This guy signed me out of school early to go to Dodger opening day, so we go way back. And that's only because my parents love you, so...
It's amazing that they let me, like, you know, let you just leave school with some guy who wasn't even related to you. It was kind of crazy.
LAUSD, man.
Oh, man, that is crazy. Yeah, so we're going to have to talk off air so I can get some good dirt on Vanderbilt.
Oh,
over
boy.
Here. Might need a bargaining chip in the near future.
Yeah, fantasy playoffs are here. And in our own personal podcast league, we are playing each other. Nate and I are playing each other this week in the playoffs. But let's start, before we get into real playoff talk, let's start with Johnny Manziel, who came on the scene last week. And what do you expect? I know we're getting probably the official decision on Wednesday, but what do you expect fantasy-wise from Manziel going forward?
You know, I think that's the thing, is that it's so up in the air about what he can do. I mean, yeah, they've got one real credible frightening receiver there, and that's Josh Gordon. After that, it's kind of a grab bag, so you worry about whether or not he's going to try to force the ball to Gordon. We've seen Brian Hoyer get into trouble with that. The upside for Manziel is that he can run the football, and so when things break down, he can get out of the pocket and move with his legs. It's why he was so good for those years at Texas A&M. His ability to just scramble and make things out of nothing, it's going to serve him well in the NFL. That's how he scored his one and only touchdown. I would say, though, if you're at a point where you're reaching for Manziel off the waiver wire or you're considering starting Johnny Manziel, chances are you aren't in the playoffs, or you are probably going to have a very short stay in the playoffs, because like in the real NFL, fantasy football is very dependent on having a quarterback get you big numbers. Otherwise, you're relying on guys from other positions to pick up the slack.
Now, the thing that really has frustrated me all season with my team, you know, we started off strong. We had a little bit of a struggle in the middle, and now we kind of turn the things up as we gear up towards the playoffs. You know, my quarterback is solid. Got Drew Brees. My running backs are solid. My tight end is solid. The wide receivers to me have been the most frustrating part of this season, and I'm in about three or four leagues, and every league, it's just a matter of every week I'm mixing and matching and trying to piecemeal a receiving core together. Has there been any rhyme or reason to receivers in the NFL and fantasy football this year, man?
You know, I mean, there's some guys that have been on top that you'd expect. I mean, Demaryius Thomas is going to do his thing. Jordy Nelson is going to do his thing. But we've seen some guys really struggle. I mean, Calvin Johnson has not been the same guy this year. He had a great week in week one. He had a great week on Thanksgiving Day. In between, he's battled injuries. He's been inconsistent. The Lions have been up and down. So it has been frustrating at times. This has been the year, and I've said it pretty much from the first couple weeks of the season, I was big on a lot of the rookies this year. I was calling it the year of the rookie receiver, and people kind of chuckled about that. And then we got to about week 8 or 9, and everybody started to jump on board with that, because you know, obviously, you know, Kelvin Benjamin's been big. Odell Beckham, since he came on the field, has been huge. I was big on Brandon Cooks before he got hurt. Jordan Matthews. I mean, the list goes on and on. Even, you know, Jarvis Landry has picked things up recently. So it has been a little bit of a weird year in that respect. Part of it's because the rules obviously slant toward quarterbacks and wide receivers, so that means there's a lot more depth at that position, which is a good and bad thing. But it has been weird. Although I will say, if you figure out the tight end position, then I need to talk to you a little bit more, because that's been the one position that we have all kind of collectively had a hard time to beyond Gronk and Jimmy Graham and, you know, maybe Julius Thomas. It's been so hard to figure out tight ends this year.
Well, see, I like that. I was able to get Breeze and Graham, so I was pretty set at those two positions. And then I think I plugged in a couple of guys, you know, here and there when Graham was struggling or when he had a bye week. But for the most part, I've had Graham solid at that spot all year long. But it's just, you know, I've got my wide receivers. I got like Reggie Wayne, Kendall Wright, Anquan Boldin. It's like I've got a lot of guys that are very similar in production, and there's not one, like, number one receiver out of my bunch.
Yeah, no, I feel you on that one. Like, yeah, Reggie Wayne falling off the way he has kind of surprised me this year. I mean, I figured T.Y. Hilton would step up. I thought he was going to eventually take over as the number one guy. I didn't see Reggie Wayne just falling off the way he has completely. I was big on Kendall Wright at the start of the year. I thought he was a sweeper after having almost 100 catches last year, but he hasn't produced this season. Anquan has kind of gone the opposite way for me. I didn't expect much from him at the start of the season, but he's picked things up. I mean, the Niners have been so inconsistent moving the football and scoring points, but if there's anybody you can trust in the passing game, it's kind of become Anquan Boldin. I mean, I always look at him as that guy who, if you were an NFL coach, if you were an actual team, you love having him on the field because he's tough and he makes crucial plays for you. But in fantasy, he was never a big producer, at least not the last few years. But recently, in the last, you know, 3 or 4 weeks, he's picked things up and he's kind of been a nice little flex play, a guy off the bench, but he's not your number one receiver. He's not just going to be that guy.
Now, at this time of year, what do you suggest in terms of strategy? If you're in the playoffs, do you think that you need to go with the guy that's had the hot hand, or do you want to go with guys that are established and have been getting points all year, but maybe not, you know, like what's the kid from New England that had a breakout week?
Jonas Gray.
I'm big on, as we say, start your studs. You know, there's a reason you drafted some of these guys. In fact, we were talking about that in a meeting earlier today, that, you know, you look at it and sure, Ryan Fitzpatrick was great last week, or a guy like, you know, Russell Wilson, or not Russell Wilson, probably not a good example, but Eli Manning might have a matchup that you think he can exploit this week, but do you really trust your playoff life to Eli Manning or Ryan Fitzpatrick, especially if you've got, you know, somebody like a Russell Wilson or somebody like that sitting on your bench? I mean, there's a reason you drafted these guys to be your number one. I mean, Peyton Manning against the Bills, it's not really a good matchup. The Bills' defense has been pretty good, but you're not really going to sit Peyton Manning in the playoffs at this point. So I do believe in that. I think, you know, in some instances, where if you are, like, at your wide receiver spot, if you are struggling with the guys you have in your lineup, you know, then maybe you do take a chance off the waiver wire with somebody like Jarvis Landry, who's been playing well. You know, maybe if you want to take a chance on a Kenny Stills now that Brandon Cooks is out of the lineup. I think it's okay to play the matchups when you are weak at a certain position. But if you've got a guy who's a stud, you don't worry about who is lining up on the other side from them. You're going to play that guy, because if you sit them and they have a huge game, it's going to be a long off season of you kicking yourself.
Now, you mentioned tight end. I've had the tight end woes because I loaded up on Jordan Cameron. I was all in on the Trojan, and his head is hurting still. So he's not going to play this week probably. And I've been trying to rotate guys in and out. Is there a tight end out there that can give me any help this week? I'm currently have Owen Daniels, and I'm not very confident in what he can do.
Yeah, you know, he was surprisingly good last week. That one kind of caught me by surprise. A guy that I've been on all year is Martellus Bennett. Generally, he tends to fade after September, but this year he's been fine. I've also had this irrational fantasy man crush on Blaine Allen, and it just seems like people have been slow to catch on to that, and maybe they're kind of down on him after he missed last week, but he should be back for this week, and he's another guy just because Andrew Luck is so good and uses his tight ends so much. And finally, the third guy that I've been big on all year is Travis Kelce, who nobody knew his name at the start of the season, and because the Chiefs don't have wide receivers, you know, it boggles my mind that the Chiefs still have not thrown a touchdown pass to a wide receiver this year. So that means a guy like Travis Kelce could be a sneaky guy if he's available on the waiver wire somewhere.
With the regular season over for fantasy purposes, who's been your biggest bust of the season so far?
Doug Martin.
You're a little better, aren't there. You?
He is certainly up there for biggest bust of the season. You know, I would say that the biggest bust this year might be Cordarrelle Patterson.
He's on my team.
Because we expected so much from him. He was so good at the end of last year, and North Turner took over as offensive coordinator, and we heard all this stuff about how they loved him in Minnesota and how they were going to run all these extra plays especially for him. And then last week, he plays three entire snaps. Three snaps. They throw him the ball one time. It was incomplete on a screen pass that even if he had caught it, probably would have picked up maybe a couple of yards. It's just, I can't ever think of a time a guy has gone from getting so much preseason hype, even within his own team, to being just a non-factor by the time we get to December.
Yeah, I'm still going to say Doug Martin, just because personally,
he's an honorable mention.
I feel some type of way about Doug Martin. I traded last year when I realized I wasn't going to make the playoffs. I made a trade, and we're in a league that you can trade draft picks as well. And so I made a trade. So this year I was feeling good. I had two first-round picks, and I picked two second-round picks. And I picked up Breeze. I picked up Graham. I picked up DeMarco Murray, and I picked up Doug Martin. I was like, I got a world-beater team right now. And Breeze has struggled a bit at times. Jimmy Graham's been hurt a little bit. But Doug Martin, like, he's dead to me. I will never draft Doug Martin again as long as I play fantasy.
Well, I was going to say, I mean, you know, 3 out of 4 ain't bad. I mean, Breeze has been, like, you know, super spectacular this year, but he's been decent. And, you know, Jimmy Graham is still the number two tight end, and, you know, DeMarco Murray has been a beast all year. So, you know, 3 out of 4.
You know what he left out, right? The part where he somehow got Eddie Lacy on his team, too. So.
My Eddie Lacy trade, like, people were mocking me because I had Tom Brady. I drafted Tom Brady as a backup to Drew Brees, and I was trying to trade him for the first 3 or 4 games of the season, and, you know, that was when everybody was on that, you know, Brady's done kick. And so I'm like, hey, Tom Brady's a good quarterback. So I traded him to a guy for Eddie Lacy, and they're like, oh, that's a terrible trade. That's a terrible trade. Now it looks pretty even now.
Absolutely, looks pretty even. I was big on Eddie Lacy at the start of the year. I had him ranked at the start of the year as the number 4 running back. I had him ahead of Marshawn Lynch even. I thought he was going to be that good. So that worked out for you, you know. But I'll say with Doug Martin, I don't even think the Buccaneers know what they're doing with their running game. You know, so Martin comes out of nowhere the last couple of weeks after it had been Bobby Rainey and maybe Charles Sims, and now it's back to Doug Martin. I've given up on trying to figure out Tampa altogether.
Now, a position some people may not look into when, you know, composing their fantasy team for the playoffs is kicker. And I'll tell you from experience that, you know, kickers can help you win a game. And Cairo Santos from the Chiefs has been a big boost to my team in the mid part of the season. But are there some kickers out there that may still be available that people aren't talking about that could help some folks this weekend?
I somehow had a feeling there was going to be a kicker question coming with this one. You know, I think at this point, a lot of the big kickers are pretty much locked up. I mean, a guy like Cody Parkey has been a big, big help. You know, now you've got Connor Barth, who is back. He's in Denver after the Broncos let go of Brandon McManus. So he may be a guy that's still out there because, he just popped up within the last few weeks, and it never hurts being a part of that Denver Bronco offense. You keep an eye on a guy like Randy Bullock, who is a little bit inconsistent, but I would say that this week at least, with the Texans taking on the Jaguars, there's a chance that he could get some opportunities to play. And, you know, maybe Billy Cundiff. If Johnny Football can really get things going, if he gets the start and he can really move this ball, you know, maybe there's a chance for Billy Cundiff to score. If for no other reason, then even if the Colts jump out to a big lead early, maybe there's a chance for garbage points. Because I am not above having my fantasy players score garbage points. They still count in fantasy football. I will take them any way I can get them.
Just don't start Nick Folk after last night's performance.
No, do not start Nick Folk.
Actually, don't start any Jet, really.
That's pretty much a rule. Avoid the Jet.
Oh, boy. Moving over to college football, since I know you're also a fan. So, over this season, Nate has decided to jump on the Notre Dame bandwagon for some unknown reason. I don't know if it's despite me as a USC fan or what, but I think the Notre Dame season has finally crashed and burned. What did you think of Saturday's game against USC, and do you think Brian Kelly will be on the hot seat now?
I think he will be on the hot seat. I was surprised that it was as one-sided as it was. You know, I had seen a couple of weeks ago there were some issues there with Notre Dame that I thought it could that USC could be competitive. But I feel like it was a game where, you know, I think the Irish got ambushed a little bit. You know, Cody Kessler coming out and firing like he has been. You know, the thing about Kessler, he doesn't make mistakes. You know, he's not always spectacular. He's certainly not going to be mentioned in the same breath with the Hundleys and the Mariotas and the Winstons, but he's steady and he doesn't make mistakes. He's kind of a game manager, if you will, at the college level. If game managers, you know, threw six touchdowns in football games, that sort of thing. But I think that for Brian Kelly, the issue is becoming having these teams get off to hot starts and then fading down the stretch. And even a couple years ago, when they had that run to the national championship game and then just got hammered, I think people are going to start to look at how his teams finish as opposed to how they start. And I think it was the same thing that you saw with Ty Willingham when he was there. He got off to quick starts, and those teams faded down the stretch. And I think at some point, people around South Bend are going to want Brian Kelly's teams to finish. And so I think there are going to be a lot of questions as it for all the recruits he's bringing in, all the talent he's got there, and as good as they start the season, if they continue to fade in November, then Brian Kelly may be looking for a new job.
Well, speaking of teams that are fading down the stretch and coaches that may or may not be on the hot seat, let's talk about the U real quick. And the Hurricanes, they had a couple good wins in the middle of the season, but they've looked absolutely, you know, hapless the past couple of weeks. I think that Virginia loss really sticks out because down here, I'm here in Virginia, and I know how bad Virginia is, and I fear for Mike London's job. But do you think Al Golden's going to get a chance to come back with Brad Kaya and try to do it again next season?
I think he will, just because, you know, Kaya, for all his ups and downs, I mean, there's a lot to be excited about. There are a lot of positives there for him this year. And so, you know, I think at some point we have to wrap our heads around as a sporting public the fact that the U is not the U that we all know. It's not, you know, it's not that group, whether you go back to, you know, the 80s and you've got the Michael Irvin style teams there, or you go into the, you know, the 90s and the early 2000s when Larry Coker was running things and they were still competitive. It's not that program anymore. I think we all want it to be, and when, you know, when they win a couple of games, we start to think that maybe the U is back. Because, look, honestly, when the U is good, whether you love them or hate them, they're fun for college football because they are kind of this big, bad bully when they're at their best. But right now, they're not there, and I think people need to realize that. Plus the fact that when you look at the ACC, you know, you've got Florida State certainly at the top of the pile there. But beyond that, there's a lot of opportunities for teams, for programs to really be competitive in this league. I mean, you know, Clemson is always inconsistent. You've got Louisville, you've got Georgia Tech. They're in the rankings, but I don't know that anybody believes those teams are absolute juggernauts. So if you are Miami, I think you can still believe that you're not that far away from being competitive and playing for an ACC championship again. And I think they will give Al Golden at least another year or two to try to figure it out. But, you know, if Kaya doesn't take any big steps forward in the next year or two, then, you know, that could be another coaching change coming down there.
We'll get you out of here on this question. Of all the major games this weekend in college football, who's the one team that should be on upset alert?
I'm going to say Oregon. Just because Arizona knows how to play them, and they can be really physical at times. Yeah, and I think that's the one thing that has always plagued the Ducks, is that they've been built on speed. They spread you out. They play kind of a basketball on grass style. But the one thing they've had trouble with over the years are teams that can be physical with them. I mean, we've seen it in the past with Stanford. We saw it in that championship game against Auburn. Anytime somebody can line up and punch them in the mouth, especially on short yardage or goal line, the Ducks can struggle a little bit. So I'm curious to see if they fixed what kind of went wrong for them earlier in the year. I do think Oregon wins. I think for the sake of the Pac-12, they need Oregon to win because they need a representative there. But I would say that it is not going to be a cakewalk for them this week.
And if you happen to be in Vegas this weekend, take Arizona plus 14.5. No respect for the Wildcats. They already beat Oregon once.
No respect for the Wildcats. You know what I mean? Rich Rod was the Pac-12 coach of the year. No respect? Come on.
Yeah, so.
So, Marcus, real quick, if any of our listeners would like to get some advice from a fantasy football expert, you know, is there a way they can hit you up on social media?
Yeah, absolutely. Come hit me on Twitter. I'm at Marcus G. That's M-A-R-C-A-S, the letter G. You can also find me on the television, on your local NFL network. NFL Fantasy Live airs 5 p.m. Eastern, 2 p.m. Pacific every day on Monday through Friday, at least on NFL Network. So you can find me there, too.
You're going to be up there wearing them suits with Dion.
Yeah, man. So check it out, man. It's Bow Tie Tuesday. Come check that out.
Listen, I had never seen Marcus in a suit until he got on television. This was, like, all new to me. It blew my mind.
Oh, man, absolutely. There used to be all, you know, T-shirts and jeans all the time.
Yeah.
Hey, you're in the big league. You're up there with Sapp. You know, you got to dress the part.
Absolutely.
All right, well, we appreciate your time, Marcus, and hopefully your advice will help some of our struggling fantasy football owners out there. And, you know, if Marcus beats me in fantasy football this weekend, we appreciate the time, but this will be your last appearance on the King of Sports podcast. You and Ben Martin will be fans.
I appreciate it, Charles. I will leave you with this, man. Good luck to your fantasy teams unless you are playing me.
There you go. Thanks, man.
Good stuff.
All right.
All right. So that was very insightful, very informative, Marcus. I think I'm going to take that advice and put a hurting on you this weekend.
Yeah, we'll see. You did... Well, we'll step ahead to our pits in a second for last week, but you did put a bit of a dent in the...
What I tell you last week, Marcus, I'm catching up to you.
Yeah, slowly but surely.
So every week we do our NFL Picks Challenge. We pick four Sunday games as well as the Monday night game. And, Marcus, can you give the people an update on what we did last week?
Last week I went 1-4. Nate, you went 2-3. So overall, I'm 35-30. You are 34-31.
Catching up to you.
Yeah.
Hey, if you can go 4-1 and 1-4, and I'll just stay at 3-2 and 2-3. Eventually, I'm going to catch up to you.
That's a fact.
That is scientific math. Science. I was going to say scientific mathematical, but that's not even a thing. So let's get into some picks, Marcus. Some interesting games this week. Let's start with, since we're talking about Johnny Manziel, let's talk about the Colts heading to Cleveland to take on the Browns. What's the line on that?
Colts minus 4.5.
Colts minus 4.5? I think I'm going to go with, and I hate to do it because you've got Andrew Luck as your starting quarterback.
Yes, I do.
I'm going to go with the Colts.
So am I. Sorry, Johnny Football.
All right, let's go to Marcus's other team, the Jets, as they take on the Minnesota Vikings.
Oh, boy.
What is the line on this particular contest?
Vikings minus 6.
And Geno's still going to be starting?
Yeah, because that's how you lose games. We want to get higher draft picks now. But they covered on Monday, so it's weird. So they can still run the ball. They run the ball fine, but when it comes to passing it, they're just clueless.
And Minnesota's not a world beater.
No.
I'll take the Vikings.
Yeah, I might as well. I took the Jets last week. They burned me. Vikings.
This game doesn't work if you pick the same team I pick, Marcus.
Words to my advantage. I'll never lose my lead.
Let's go and choose our next game, and I think we're going to go with... Let's go with Niners-Raiders.
49ers minus 9.
49ers minus 9? I don't think that's enough points.
Yeah, after last week's game, oof.
I don't think that's nearly enough points. Yeah, Raiders lost 52-0 last week. And the Niners lost 19-3 to the Seahawks.
Raiders at home.
I'm still going with the Niners, right? Even with the points.
Oh, boy. You know what? I'll take the Raiders.
All right. Next game on Sunday, let's go with the Rams and the Redskins, because this will be a nice little segue to our final topic in second down this week.
Rams minus three.
Rams minus three. And we got McCoy starting still for the Redskins.
Yep.
Give me the Rams.
Rams.
And finally, our Monday night game. It is a matchup between division leaders, I believe, Marcus. It's the Packers take on the mighty Atlanta Falcons.
Yeah, here's what Vegas thinks about your fucking divisional leader. Packers minus 12.5.
Hey, it doesn't matter how you get there, as long as you get there.
Monday's not going to help you get there. That's a loss.
I agree that it's a loss. I'm not going to say it's going to be that big, though. I mean, the Falcons haven't been good, but it's not like they don't have weapons. So, I'm going to go with my Falcons, Marcus.
Packers.
Are you going to make the Cunnell pick?
Yep.
So, those are our picks for Sunday, and then, of course, the Monday night game. You can follow along each and every week with our picks challenge on Facebook.com/TheKingsOfSport. And as I alluded to a moment ago, Marcus, to close out this segment this week, we are going to go back to St. Louis and kind of a postscript to our Ferguson discussion last week.
By the way, no complaints. Told you.
Yeah, we didn't get any complaints. Well, Henry did say if he was going to be our complaint department, he wanted some compensation.
Right. Yeah, we'll work on that.
But the St. Louis Police Department and the Rams had a little bit of an incident this week, Marcus.
Yeah, so prior to Sunday's game against the Raiders, five members of the Rams came out and did the hands up, don't shoot. And the St. Louis Police Department didn't take too kindly to that gesture. And they basically pretty much condemned the team in the public for what happened. And then there was this whole back and forth between the Rams and the police department, because the police department claims they apologized to the Rams for their statement, and now the Rams are saying we never got an apology. So why the St. Louis Police Department felt the need to intervene and step in, I don't understand. I mean, that's and I'm glad the NFL didn't fine these guys for what they did, because that would have been just another black guy for the league if they were to say, hey, look, we're going to fine you for what you did. I think they understand that, you know, these guys who live in the city of St. Louis are experiencing something that the rest of the league probably can't relate to, so I just don't understand why the police department decide to stick their nose in the business of a professional team.
Yeah, and the players were Jared Cook, Kenny Britt, Stedman Bailey, Chris Givens, and Tavon Austin. Austin probably the most notable out of that group.
Insert your Kenny Britt, I've been arrested before joke here.
But the funny thing is, like, this really would not be that big of a story if the, you know, St. Louis PD didn't make it a story. Because the only reason I knew that this happened was because, you know, it was on SportsCenter when they ran through the highlights of the game, which nobody, I mean, even Raider fans weren't watching that game.
Yeah.
So if they hadn't said anything, this would have been a one-night story, literally.
Yeah, the story didn't really take off as I was expecting and when it actually happened during the day on Sunday. But it wasn't, yeah, you're right, it wasn't until the police department got involved that evening that it really blew up.
And, you know, of course, you know, everybody's got to take their sides. And, you know, Bill O'Reilly came out and he's like, you know, I don't think the players are smart enough to know what they're doing. And then, you know, you got fans on both sides going back at it. And to me, the you know, I don't have an issue with the police department saying, you know, hey, we don't agree with what they did. But to me, once they made the step from we don't agree to you owe us an apology, that to me was when it was like, are you out of your mind?
Yeah.
Like, we owe you an apology for what?
Yeah, very, very weird story. And things have been quiet in Ferguson. I feel like things have been more active in Los Angeles than Ferguson over the last week or so, with the protests really picking up over the weekend and the whole, you know, let's walk on the freeway style of protesting, which I don't appreciate at all. But, you know, LAPD is they're pros when it comes to arresting folks, so they've been handling that pretty well.
Yeah, I mean, LAPD is I'm not going to say anything because I may have to come out and visit you one of these days, and I don't need those problems.
Yeah, you don't say anything stupid. They'll find you.
The LAPD is a very competent organization who do not discriminate.
Nope, not anymore. We'll say that.
But somebody that may discriminate, Marcus, is one Vincent Kennedy McMahon. And we're going to get into that next segment.
Allegedly.
Allegedly.
Just in case anyone's listening.
Stick and stay. More Kings of Sport. Right after the break. It goes anger, anger. That's one of my hang-ups. You don't want to rock and roll, kid. Your head gets banged up. Feel tension. Blood starts pumping. My friends always winning the fights. I still jump in. And I don't have a drinking problem. Drink cock shit, fall down. No problem. When I drink, it's a problem. Because I cause problems. Robotic. Not like you forgot, but I'm slightly psychotic. I'm here to terrorize the world. The minds up of you boys and girls. It's just too hot to touch.
What's going on, party people and everybody out there in podcast land? It's your man, Nate. And we'll get back to the show in just a little while. But while we got some time, I just wanted to let you guys know the three ways you can get in touch with the Kings of Sport. Way number one, you can tweet us on Twitter, because that's where people tweet people, apparently. You can hit us up on Twitter at KOS_POD. That's CosPod on Twitter. Way number two, you can email us at thekingsofsport@gmail.com. That's thekingsofsport@gmail.com. And finally, you can hit us up on our Facebook page, facebook.com/thekingsofsport. So there you have it. Those are the three ways you can get in touch with us. You can leave feedback. You can join the discussion. Three ways you can be down with the Kings. We good, Marcus? Do we have to pay warranty for this? Because I ain't got G-Funk money.
And now it's time to get you caught up on the week's biggest stories from the world of professional wrestling. It's the Ringside Wrap on the Kings of Sport.
We are back on the Kings of Sport, and no, your ears are not deceiving you. That is the Ringside Rap theme music, and you know, we kind of put this segment on ice for a little while, but when there are big stories, when there are big discussions within the world of professional wrestling, or sports entertainment, as some people like to call it, we will address them. And this week, Marcus, a lot of stories going around, a lot of chatter going around, and I got to say, man, it's a good week to be a podcaster.
It's a great week to be a podcaster, a wrestling podcaster at that, which means it's a good week for Squarespace and for Extends and other, what other ads are in these podcasts?
If you got low testosterone.
What's the stamp on? Stamps.com?
Stamps.com, or what's
the free scale?
DraftKings?
DraftKings, yeah, they're all cashing in this week.
By God, I don't have time to play every week, but when I play with DraftKings. Jim Ross ain't playing no damn fantasy football.
No.
But man, like you said, a very interesting weekend. You know, it was funny because what was it? The day after Thanksgiving.
Actually, it was Wednesday. He dropped it Wednesday night. Because okay, I listened to it Wednesday night. Yeah, Wednesday night he dropped it. So probably around midnight Eastern.
Okay, yeah, so Wednesday night. But I think things really, like, because it was good timing when he dropped it. Because we had Thanksgiving the next day. And then it was kind of like people were just kind of realizing what they had heard.
Oh, I just wish you'd explain what we're talking about.
Yeah. We, of course, are talking about the Men on a Mission podcast, which you can listen to. Available through Pipe Bomb Radio, but no, it's not the Men on a Mission podcast. We're talking about Colt Cabana's The Art of War and his guest.
Art of Wrestling. Art of War is a whole different series of events.
Sun Tzu.
Yeah.
I mean, it may turn into a war. You know, Vince can get vindictive, allegedly. The Art of Wrestling podcast with Colt Cabana and his guest this past week was none other than CM Punk, and it was, what, like 2 hours?
2 hours.
Yeah, the two-hour podcast, and Punk held no punches and said a lot of expletives and things like that.
Yeah, it was very enlightening, and it was also very disturbing at times at some of the situations he was describing in the locker room. Not so much about creative, because, I mean, really, at the end of the day, there's only so much you can do about creative, and that's sort of judgmental about where you think you belong on the card. But when it came to some of the medical issues that Punk was describing, specifically dealing with his staph infection that he allegedly had for 3 months without it going diagnosed, and also he had several concussions that he suffered in the WWE, and he described it as he was sort of being rushed back into the ring without getting properly cleared. And also with his surgeries, he's had a couple surgeries while with the company, and there were times where the WWE reportedly had a doctor, Dr. James Andrews, clear CM Punk without actually seeing him in person. So there's a lot of stuff which, if true, could really be bad for the company. But I'm not sure if, you know, in terms of a media outlet that's really going to pursue this story, I'm not sure if there's someone out there who's actually going to do the dirt and figure out what exactly is true and what's not.
Right. And, full disclosure, you did write an article about this, and it was on Yahoo Sports, and it was very interesting. So I just, from that standpoint, from that perspective, as a journalist, where did you come down on the interview? Because I've got my own thoughts, but I'd be interested to hear what you thought of the interview first before I kind of throw my two cents in.
It was, there was some stuff that I heard him say that I knew just didn't make sense in terms of a time frame. There was one situation where he pointed out about wanting to walk out with Chael Sonnen at a UFC event in January, and then he mentioned in the podcast that a few weeks later Triple H was walking out with Floyd at his fight, but Floyd fought in May. So there were some situations like that where the timing didn't add up. It was all true. Floyd did have Triple H walked out with him, I think, on multiple occasions now. So a little stuff like that was a little off. But overall, I felt strong enough to what he was saying that I ran a post on Thursday, and I did reach out to the WWE because that's the only fair thing to do. And listen here, dirt sheets. This is called journalism. You gotta at least give the other side a chance to respond. So I reached out, and they got back to me, and they sent over a statement, which really didn't go into much detail about, what exactly Punk said or accused them of. So I guess they maybe knew that the Vince McMahon interview was coming on Monday, and that would be addressed. But, yeah, I at least reached out and made the effort. So I stand by what I wrote. I mean, it was pretty generic.
Yeah, for me, I didn't hear the entire podcast, but I did hear some of the key excerpts from what Punk said. And if true, it is kind of damning, or pretty damning, to the WWE in terms of the medical care that they give these performers. And I've got my own issues with that anyway, just in terms of some of the veterans, like, Kamala and some of the care that they received post wrestling. It's like, you know, I think there should be something in place, a structure to take care of some of your veterans. But that's besides the point. But in terms of what Punk said, I found him believable, but I also didn't find him that likable. If that makes any sense.
Yeah.
Like, I found him believable, and I did see where he had a gripe, but at the same time, I think that it's not all WWE's fault, it's not all CM Punk's fault, but I do think, A, you know, you can't have a bad work environment and also be a difficult employee. The two things don't have to be mutually exclusive.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that, you know, he does have a part to play in terms of why that whole thing kind of ended badly.
And I think if Colt Cabana was more on top of his game, I think he could have got Punk to admit that he's probably difficult to work with at times. I can't remember if he mentioned it on the show because it was so long. But I'm sure he would have admitted to being a bit of an asshole at times.
Yeah, and I think that was maybe the one fault I had with the podcast. I enjoy the art of wrestling, but I do think that in some cases, and this one in particular, where you've got two guys that are so close, that it's kind of hard for Colt to be kind of objective or even antagonistic in an interview, which is different than what we saw with the WWE's kind of rebuttal on Monday night.
Yeah, so the timing just happened to work out where Steve Austin did a live version of his podcast on the WWE Network following Raw, and his guest was Vince McMahon, and they didn't address the topic right off the top. It sort of worked its way in there, but maybe 20 minutes in or so, Austin finally addressed CM Punk, and McMahon did apologize for the company firing him on his wedding day, and Punk went into that story about how he got his severance papers, and he didn't quit, technically. He got fired, and he got the papers on his wedding day. And then McMahon, as Vince McMahon is known to do, what's best for business, he left the door open for a possible return one day. He said he would love to do business again with CM Punk.
But yeah, I thought this was thoroughly entertaining and you know, kind of in a counterpoint to the Colt Cabana podcast. Like, Steve Austin was not there to be Vince McMahon's buddy or to be a company man.
Not at all.
Like, I was actually impressed because, you know, I went into the thing thinking, you know, we're going to get, you know, one or two things about Punk, but it's going to be a lot of corporate shilling on the network and this and that. But, you know, I thought Austin, in his role as an interviewer, did a really good job.
Yeah, you can tell he's had a lot of experience doing these interviews now. He's done the podcast for, I believe, a year and a half now.
I think so.
He's done it. So he's pretty good at drilling these guys, and he wasn't intimidated by Vince. I'm sure they have a great relationship off camera, so he felt comfortable enough to ask him pretty much anything. And Vince, for the most part, the only real thing he backed away from was the Jim Ross stuff.
Yeah, he didn't really want to touch on Jim Ross, which was interesting to me. You know, he even addressed Randy Savage.
Yeah,
but he didn't want to address Jim Ross.
He didn't address the rumor with Randy Savage. How come Austin didn't ask him about that?
Yeah, that would have been the one thing that I wish Austin would have asked him about, other than that, is what's going on with the brothers, man? Why the hell are you booking the brothers like this?
Yeah. I mean, he sort of went after creative a few times, but he singled out Cesaro in particular, but he didn't really address the whole black wrestler situation.
But yeah, those are some interesting comments, you know, in terms of talking about the locker room. Like, there were some shots fired. They weren't subtle shots at all. You know, he said Cesaro didn't have the charisma to be a top guy. He's a good guy, but you know, I don't know if he's because he's Swiss.
He's Swiss. I don't know. Does he not know the language?
he's just too neutral. Damn it.
Yeah.
But yeah, like, if I'm in the locker room, I might be feeling some type of way this morning.
Well, maybe that's the kick in the ass they need.
That's a good point, but if I'm the talent, I would flip it back on him and say, you know, what's going on with creative, though, because it's a two-way street. And to me, it seemed like Vince put more of the onus on the performers, which has some merit, but didn't say that they could be doing better.
And he sort of used the fans as a scapegoat in terms of trying to determine who was over and who wasn't. He's, oh, it's the fans to decide. Well, that's true to a certain extent, but, you know.
Ask Zack Ryder how much that really matters.
Yeah, Zack Ryder was over, but it didn't matter to the company. They tried to silence his fandom, so. Yeah, it was about 75 minutes long. And I'm sure it'll be released on Steve Austin's podcast feed sometime this week, if you don't have the network. But I would love to see this once a month from Vince. Just sort of did like a State of the Union with the locker room and just sort of catch up. And because he was pretty honest. I'll give him that.
Yeah, he was much more candid than I thought. And it actually probably was more intriguing than Raw.
He even addressed Shane.
Yeah, Shane's in Japan. He's doing well.
That sounded awkward too. Like they really don't talk much.
Right. Well, why does he need to? He's got his real son now. He's got Triple H.
They mean Hornswoggle.
Triple H. You know Triple H is like the son Vince always wanted.
Yeah.
a true
worker.
Not
a spot monkey like
right,
Shane.
Right. Why can't you be more like your brother-in-law? That's a real McMahon. I'm even going to give you the McMahon name. Change your name to Paul McMahon. So, yeah, that was really interesting. And I would like to see more of those. I think there's a lot of guys that would be interesting. You know, Hogan, now that he's back with the company, I'd be interested to see a sit down, you know, with Hogan. I think Austin would be a really good guy to do, you know, to kind of be it's a crazy comparison, but, you know, he's kind of like their Ed Bradley, in a sense. Like, he's somebody you trust, and I think from an interviewer, that's important. Like, you know, he's not towing the company line.
Yeah, I guess he would have been, I was going to say, like, a Mean Gene Oakland, but I don't think we could trust Mean Gene even.
Yeah, Mean Gene stayed trying to put one over on him.
Yeah.
I'll tell you what's going on, but you got to call the hotline.
I don't think the 80s really had someone who they do. I just, Jim Ross had his moments when he was doing his interview stuff where you felt like you could trust what he was saying. But, yeah, they haven't really had someone like that.
Yeah, and I think it's a good role. It's a good way to bring, you know, Austin back into the fold. And maybe most importantly, it's a good selling point for the network, which could use all the selling points they can get right now.
But the network is doing great, according to Vince.
Oh, yeah. The network is doing great. It's just these damn millennials. They don't know how to access it.
Man, he ripped into the young people.
Get off my lawn.
Yeah.
But before we get into our final topic this week, Marcus, you had teased something to me off the air in terms of something tangentially related to Vince McMahon.
Yes.
So let's let the people know what you was talking about.
So you posted earlier on the Facebook page another movie podcast that you're plugging, and I said, well, I got a podcast to plug since we're plugging podcasts today. And during this Vince McMahon interview last night, friend of the show, Corey Erdman of the Fight Network, was tweeting about Gilmore Girls, and he was discussing the two primary characters, Rory and Lorelai Gilmore, and how awful they were as human beings on the show. And, you know, I had to defend Lorelai Gilmore.
Yes, anybody that listens to this show from the beginning knows that what was that, your favorite, one of your favorite mothers?
Oh, yeah, she's...
When we did our Mother's Day show last year?
Yeah, she's her and Felicia Rashad, her and Claire, except Claire ended up marrying a...
When I get into that this week, Mark.
A touchy-feely dino, so I don't know. There's my Cosby Show reference from last week. The man's a gynecologist. I can't watch a Cosby Show now. Ugh. So back to Gilmore Girls. So
what's he doing off examinations in that ratty 70s robe he has in that picture?
In his little home office, yeah.
Yeah. Oh, Bill.
So anyways, we were going back and forth on Twitter about the characters on Gilmore Girls, and one of my coworkers jumped in and suggested that we do a Gilmore Girls podcast, only to discover that two guys recently started a Gilmore Girls podcast called Gilmore Guys. And it coincided with the Gilmore Girls starting on Netflix in October. October 1st, the entire series went up on Netflix, so these guys started a podcast around that. So I wanted to plug their podcast. It's a white dude and black dude. I listened to the first episode today. It's pretty entertaining. And one of the guys was a super fan of the show, and the other guy had never seen it before. So it's a good mix of the two because, you know.
Was the black guy the guy that had never seen the show?
Duh. Do you even have to ask that question?
Yeah, so the only black guy in the Gilmore demographic happens to be some light-skinned dude out in L.A.
Yeah, so if you're looking for, in the rare chance, you or your girlfriend, probably your girlfriend more than you, looking for a Gilmore Girls podcast in 2014, Gilmore Guys. So that's my plug.
All right. So, yeah, that Vince McMahon brought us to Gilmore Guys, and I'll bring it back to wrestling, but I'll plug the podcast I put on Facebook. It's Black on Black Cinema, and it's kind of – have you heard How Did This Get Made?
I've heard of it, but I haven't had to listen to it.
It's a very funny show. If you're into movies, which we know you're not,
nope.
It's a very funny show, and they cover bad movies. Well, Black on Black Cinema takes the same formula, but they focus on quote-unquote urban movies. So, like, I've listened to a couple episodes. They did a review on Pootie Tang, which is ridiculous. They did a review on Shaft, the Samuel Jackson one. And then they did a review on Friday with Ice Cube that I listened to. So, yeah, shout out to Black on Black Cinema. And, you know, shout out to all the podcasts out there doing big things. And, again, I might have a mysterious initiative next year if I don't get sucked into watching Gilmore Girls on Netflix.
If they do Belly too, let me know.
that'll hook you?
Yeah.
So, speaking of hooking people into watching black folks, A New Day made their Raw debut, Marcus. And what did you think?
Actually, I saw the SmackDown debut. I didn't watch Raw. But I did see the SmackDown debut. And my fiance watched the SmackDown debut with me, and she wasn't up to speed on the whole New Day thing. So when she first saw the promo videos, she sort of had this look like, oh, what the fuck? So, yeah, it was, you know, I thought the SmackDown match was pretty good. They have good chemistry in the ring. I mean, all three of those guys are good in the ring, so I wasn't worried about that part. But it was the part after the match where they went to the announcer's table, and Tom Phillips, Cole, and JBL started breaking out into this, like, weird, like, I don't want to call it a dance. It was just like this, I don't know. It was hard to describe, but basically shucking and jiving from your seat. And that's what I feared with this whole gimmick, that it would be these three jolly, happy black men who are paid to dance around and sing. I'm glad they didn't sing yet. Did they sing on Raw?
Did they get a microphone? Right, they came down to the aisle. They did their little dance. They're like, it's a new day. Oh, no. They were more chanting than singing. But
oh, boy.
We might get a song down the line.
Now, the one takeaway that I did enjoy were the crowd shots of the white people trying to clap along to the beat. That's always a great time. Because they got no clue what to do with that. So if we get more crowd shots, I'm good with this angle.
Oh, let me tell you, then I saw the SmackDown debut, and then I watched Raw, and it was more of the same. And honestly, the thing that ticked me off the most about their Raw debut was that they were in this tag team turmoil match, which is basically a gauntlet match. You know, it's like eight teams, and, you know, if you win, you keep going. If you lose, you're eliminated. And they were the first team in. They won the first match, and then they lost immediately to a makeshift team consisting of Tyson Kidd and the aforementioned Antonio Cesaro.
Oh, that is a weird team.
So, yeah, and it's like, you know, I understand that you didn't necessarily want them to win the match, but for all the weeks of these damn promos, you know, you could have given them a better showing. I still hold out hope that eventually they're going to turn heel. And this is interesting because this is another thing, along with, you know, talking about Punk and Vince, where if you're inside the internet wrestling bubble, there are very strong lines drawn on the issue of the New Day, where you'll get people saying you have a lot of people, mostly black people, saying that, hey, man, why we got to be shucking and jiving in 2014? And then you'll have the other side saying, hey, man, it's just wrestling. Yay. You know, these guys are having fun. What's the harm? And you know, my thing, Marcus, is we've talked about it. There are, what, 6 active black workers on the current roster?
Yep.
And or 6 active black men, should I say.
Yeah.
And out of those 6 black men, 4 of them are doing a shucking and jiving type of gimmick. 5 if you count Titus. I don't know if you want to throw him in there, but...
Oh.
4, at least 4 are doing that gimmick with the New Day and, of course, R-Truth. And so I'm like, you know, this is wrestling. Because one guy wrote to me, he was like, what's the big deal, you know? This, I don't think that this is a bad thing because it's a good role for them. And the truth is, I don't think the fans will buy them as a serious group. And I was like, the fans won't buy them as a serious group. This is an industry. This is a show where you told me for years that a zombie is wrestling and has an undefeated streak at WrestleMania. A show that you told me that the Bella Twins are actually legitimate wrestlers. A show where you've told me that Kane has been burned. He's been, his father was killed. He did something with Katie Vick.
He killed someone.
Yeah, you asking me to suspend my disbelief on this, but you can't ask me to suspend my disbelief on the fact that a black man can be taken as a serious competitor without all the trappings of the shucking and jiving. I'm like, come on, man.
I really hope your theory comes true. I think it's 50-50, but it would make sense because that was the original angle, was this whole militant group, and then they pulled back and flipped it. So I'm hoping. I think we should know. Oof. I'll give it a month, maybe.
You give them a lot more credit than I'm giving them, Marcus.
No, before they decide to if they were to pull the trigger, you got to at least give it some time with this current angle, and then before you can flip it.
See, I think they should. The best thing they could have done was to come out from the beginning, from day one. And that's the other thing, man. Debuting on SmackDown, that doesn't give me a lot of confidence either. Like, that was your big debut. But that's a side point. But I was like, if you're going to do this, the turn to be the most effective would have been like that first night where you're like, you know, they come out with the music and the choir, and then they're just like, you know, y'all are stupid for cheering at this because this is garbage. We're not clowns. We're not caricatures of ourselves. You know, we're serious competitors, this and that. That to me would have been the most effective. But, you know, we'll see. Like, I've always said that the WWE has like 5 categories for black and brown workers. You're either a thug, a rapper, a preacher, a savage, a shuck and jive artist. And that's pretty much it.
Yeah, that pretty much covers it.
I think I've covered the bases.
Wait, where does Otunga fall?
Otunga was he was just boring. I don't think they even invested enough time in him. Like, they were just like, yeah. Yeah, like Otunga was just boring. But yeah, everybody else I think you can put in one of those categories. And that's the worst thing to me. Like on its own, this angle is fine. This gimmick is okay. But when you look at it like, okay, white guys in the WWE, they can be a myriad of things. Some great, some cool, some stupid. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, you get to play with the whole box of crayons. And with the black workers, you only got 6. And 4 of them, at least, are playing this pigeonholed role. That's my problem.
And if you look at developmental, there's no one currently in developmental that you could see ever winning the WWE Championship at the moment.
Nope.
Not going to be Jason Jordan or whatever his name is.
I don't even know who the hell Jason Jordan is. Is he bad?
He's like a semi-jobber. I think he's like a former football player, maybe.
Okay. Oh yeah, I'm looking at him. He looks kind of like a black EC3.
Yeah. A little bit, yeah.
maybe he can. He and Darren Young can form a team. Where they're like they call them the Negatives, the Black Scene and the Black EC3. Bam, that's a gimmick. Take it, Vince. I don't like those gimmicks from millennials and critics. Actually, I don't even think of millennial though. We're not millennials.
No, I think it's under 30.
Yeah, so yeah, Marcus and I are not millennials.
I look like a millennial. I still live in my 20s, but I'm.
Yeah, somebody, when I was at work today, somebody was like, how old are you? I was like 37. They're like, stop playing around. They thought I was like 28, 29. I'm like, okay, I'll take that.
Yeah.
Black don't crack.
Nope.
Unless you smoke.
Yeah.
So, speaking of which, will there be drug stories in segment 4? You have to stick around to find out. More Kings of Sports, right up here.
Promotional consideration paid for by the following.
What's up, everybody? This is Kevin Kelly from Ring of Honor Wrestling. Make sure you check out The Kevin Kelly Show each and every week. PlaceToBeNation.com. We'll be talking about wrestling in the past and wrestling today. Plus, be talking about all kinds of sports and pop culture, whatever's on your mind, too. We'll answer your questions each and every week. The Kevin Kelly Show, right here. PlaceToBeNation.com.
Welcome back to the world's most dangerous sports show. Follow the danger online at facebook.com/thekingsofsport.
Can you dig it? Can you dig it? Can you dig it?
We are back on the Kings of Sport. Marcus and Nate getting ready to close up shop for yet another week. But before we do, we have to give you what you want, give you what you need. And that is the often imitated but never ever duplicated segment 4, our weekly look at the world of sports and pop culture. And we just kind of take a look at the ratchetness that's going on out there in the world. And Marcus, I know we coming off a big holiday weekend, so there's got to be some fun, funny, ratchet stories, right? You're going to give me some good stuff, like Shannon Briggs hanging out with Timac, a.k.a. Bruce Leroy. You're going to give me some good stuff, right?
How does Ray Rice sound?
It's either Ray Rice or Bill Cosby. I guess I'll go with Ray Rice.
We can go back to Bill now.
Nah, Ray Rice is cool.
All right, cool. Making sure.
So go ahead, Marcus. For those that have not heard the latest about the embattled former Baltimore Ravens running back, what is going on with Ray Rice and his wife, Janae?
Yeah, so Ray Rice is now eligible to play in the National Football League. His suspension was lifted. And, basically the arbitrator decided that it was double jeopardy what the league decided to do. He was given a original suspension, and they decided to change it over this tape that they could have had access to. So why are you penalizing Rice for something he didn't do in terms of like withholding the video? So he's now free to sign with a team, and I don't expect a team to sign him this year. I'm still 50-50 on whether a team signs him next year. But as part of his suspension getting lifted, soon after, a first-person piece was released on ESPN.com by Jemele Hill, where Jemele sat down with Janae Rice, and she got to tell her side of the story about what happened that night in the elevator. And it sort of did another side of the story, because we really haven't heard much from Janae since the incident went down. And this was a chance for her to really explain what she was thinking. And on top of that, we had the Today Show do an interview with Janae and Ray as well that they've been stretching out this week on television. So it's been a whole lot of Ray Rice the past 5 days or so.
Yeah, it's been very interesting to kind of see the reaction to these interviews. Probably the Today Show more than anything, because it had more the most viewers, the most eyeballs on it, and just kind of the reaction, you know, in social media and the like about the story. What did you think, Marcus, about, you know, just the way the two come off in the Matt Lauer interview?
I think, you know, I was curious to see or hear what she was feeling after the incident happened, because, you know, from the outside looking in, all we knew was Ray Rice hit her, and then, what, a month later they were married? And that part just didn't really connect with me. So it was good to hear that, yes, she was upset. While you might assume that she might have been upset, it was just weird. I just needed to hear that part to confirm it. She seems to be like a very sharp woman, and someone who really does love Ray Rice. And I would think you would have to be really in love to stand by your man after an incident like that, especially an incident that was such a mainstream event. I think it'd have been a lot easier if, you know, if these were two private citizens where, you know, it wasn't in the news per se. But, you know, kudos to her for standing by Ray through all this. And, you know, after sort of this whole suspension stuff and after hearing from the two of them, you know, I don't really have a problem with him coming back next season, do you?
Yeah, that was going to be my biggest takeaway. You know, what I took away most from these things is that she is his greatest ally in terms of an advocate and in terms of changing public opinion about Ray getting back on the field, because she comes across very well in these pieces. And, you know, I know, you know, there's some people out there, you know, everybody's a pop psychologist at home or on their laptop. And it's like, you know, some people are like, oh, you know, well, she's exhibiting typical victim traits in these interviews, or, you know, she's covering up things and, you know, whatever. That's none of our business. You know, the only people that it matters to is, you know, Ray and Janae. And if they can get past it, then, you know, God bless them. In terms of Ray getting back on the field, man, it's going to be interesting. I still think it's going to be tough for him, not only because he's got this stigma around him now, but also because, you know, he's not the Ray Rice of 5 years ago. You know, he still can be a serviceable back, but he's not going to be that guy that is going to be that explosive back that he was, you know, in the early part of his career. You know, he could probably get – I think he's probably got about, you know, 4, maybe 5 good years left, but
no,
you're not
going to –
How old is he now?
He's got to be 29, I think, no. 29?
I can see him getting 4 more years out of the league.
You don't see many running backs pushing 30. Three. Let's see.
Yeah, but you also see a lot of teams now doing that running back by committee deal. And so if he's not having to take the bulk of those carries, I could see him, you know, sticking around.
He's only
27. Years.
Okay.
Oh yeah. He's. I think he can do 4 more years. Yeah. But he's not going to be that number one back that he was. There's been some teams this week that expressed, you know, interest, or I guess there were things leaked that, you know, like the 49ers might have been interested. But I don't know, man. Like, here's the litmus test, Marcus. Here's the $1,000 question, or the $10,000 question. Mm-hmm. If you're an NFL GM who has a hole to fill at running back, you going AP? You going Ray Rice?
Oh, AP. Not AP. Come on.
Even with all the controversy swirling around Adrian Peterson.
What controversy? I mean, the same controversy Ray Rice has. Give me AP. And you know, I'm curious about, going back to Ray Rice, I'm curious about what the reaction will be from the black community. Will they support Ray Rice, or will they be the ones who are on the other side that are hoping he doesn't come back? Because as I was thinking the other night, just sort of comparing his situation to what happened with Chris Brown, the only real difference between the two was we got a videotape for Ray Rice compared to a photo for what happened with Rihanna. Other than that, what's the difference between the two guys? And Chris Brown, let's not pretend he was in the doghouse for very long. How long did you not hear Chris Brown's on the radio? Maybe a couple weeks, a couple months?
Yeah.
If that. And then all of a sudden, he came back to BET Awards and, oh my God, Chris Brown! And Michael Jackson tribute, and he was all good. So I said, really? I mean, and if we're going to compare Chris Brown and Ray Rice, this is the first time Ray Rice has been in trouble with the law. He's been out of trouble since this incident happened. Chris Brown has been arrested multiple times since the Rihanna incident went down. He's just an asshole. So, I mean, I just don't want us as a people, sorry to isolate the rest of y'all for a second, to not support him just because you feel like he doesn't deserve a second chance. When we're so good about giving second chances to other people, especially other people in similar situations like Ray Rice.
I don't think it's going to be black people he's got to worry about. It's the women's groups that I think he's going to have the biggest issue with. Because Ray Rice, I think that there is a phenomenon, and I always point to it in pop culture and in sports, where if you have a prominent African-American celebrity or athlete and they do something wrong, you know, I don't think there's anybody out there that's saying that Ray Rice didn't do something wrong. I think you're going to get a period where, you know, everybody's angry at him. And then for some reason or another, there's this turn, there's this pivot where it feels like the media is piling on. And 9 times out of 10, maybe 10 times out of 10, the people in charge and control in the forefront of the media, they tend not to be black. And so, you know, we saw it with Michael Jackson. We saw it with Michael Vick. You know, I think we saw it to some extent with Chris Brown, where it's like, hey, it feels like piling on, and it feels like, you know, hey, you're taking unnecessary shots, and there tends to be this kind of feeling within the black community that I don't always agree with, where we rally around persecuted, quote-unquote, black folks that really don't deserve that type of support. You know, we saw it during OJ. That's a prime example, you know what I mean? People rode so hard for the juice when, you know, if you just look at the facts of the case, like, yeah, he probably did it, man. But, you know what I mean? It became a situation where it's us versus them. It's like, hey, we can talk shit about OJ, but we're not going to let you drag him through the mud. Same thing with Mike Vick. Same thing with Chris Brown. Same thing with Michael Jackson. And we'll see if it plays out that same way with Ray Rice.
You mentioned, like, the women's group. I have a question for you. Who gets more national support, a battered black woman or a battered black dog? Because I have a feeling that the reaction we saw with Michael Vick with his situation will be, we won't see that same kind of reaction on a national scale with Jhené Rice and Ray Rice.
No.
If he decides to jump back, which is disturbing in all kinds of ways.
No, yeah, I don't think we'll see that type of outrage, and I wouldn't even say go as far as to say black woman. I'd say let's just throw out a random player. Let's say Gronk was accused of beating up his girlfriend or his fiance. Mm-hmm. I don't think you'd see that same outrage that we saw with Mike Vick, just because it's like this. And I love dogs, man. I love dogs more than cats. I love dogs more than most people.
Cats are stupid.
Yeah, but you know. The outrage over the Mike Vick stuff was just crazy to me, because it was like, there are people that have killed actual people that have gotten less flack than Mike Vick got.
And that are still playing in the NFL.
Still playing in the NFL, right. And you know, I'm not condoning Mike Vick's actions. It was stupid. It was despicable. You know, but everybody deserves a second chance if they take the necessary steps. And from all we've seen from Mike Vick, once he got out of prison, he was doing the right thing.
Yeah.
And you got people that still hold that against him to this day.
Yeah, it's going to be a very interesting summer to see how Ray Rice sort of works this in terms of the media, and if he's out there trying to make amends and, you know, trying to repair his image.
And this brings me back to my big little, sound like Kevin Hart. I'm a little big man. My big rant last week about Adrian Peterson is like, the fact that he's still not playing is preposterous to me.
Yeah.
Like, if Ray Rice, like, obviously nobody, I don't think anybody's going to sign Ray Rice this season, but if Ray Rice technically can play before Adrian Peterson, that to me is like, come on, man.
Yeah, but it's sort of apples and oranges, because the only reason why Ray Rice can play is sort of like a legal technicality type thing. It wasn't because his crime was, you know, quote-unquote, lesser than what AP did. It was sort of like, well, they fucked up. So let's expose it and, you know, beat the system.
But see, the thing that makes me upset about that is like, yeah, they fucked up. Let's expose the system. But the system still, the same system that you acknowledge was fucked up, was the system that went ahead after that incident and screwed over AP.
Yeah, that's true.
So it's like, you know, I still don't understand why Roger Goodell is in a position to make decisions like this. Like, why has that power not been taken from him?
Because they're still making money. Owners have a reason to question what he's doing, as long as those checks keep clearing. It was the first yesterday. The check cleared. They're good.
You know how they got the no more commercials for the domestic abuse?
Mm-hmm.
I'd like to see a commercial from the players. Like,
no more Roger Goodell.
No more Roger Goodell, man. Just have like all the people who was the Pittsburgh Steelers used to come out real hard against Roger.
James Harrison.
James Harrison, Richard Sherman, Marshawn Lynch wouldn't say anything, but he could be in the commercial.
Yeah.
Yeah. No more Roger Goodell. What you think, Marshawn? Yeah.
Yeah. Ask me about Lil Boosie. All right. That was a highlight.
Yeah. So yeah, I still do not understand why he's in that position. Like, I understand the money aspect of it, and I'm not even saying Roger Goodell should lose his job. I don't even think that he should be stripped of, you know, his job as commissioner. But it's like, in terms of being the disciplinarian, like, nah, man, you have not shown me that you know what to do with those responsibilities.
Yeah, he's not had a good 2014 when it comes to his power.
Like, if you're Roger Goodell, like, the fact that Ray Rice can play again, like, you must feel like an idiot. Because that was kind of like your – if anybody remembers anything from the 2014 season besides who wins the Super Bowl eventually, mm-hmm. it's going to be the Ray Rice incident. And it's going to be Adrian Peterson. And it's going to be Roger Goodell and his mishandling of player conduct.
It'd be like Adam Silver fucking up the Donald Sterling thing. And like Donald Sterling still owned the Clippers because of something he messed up on. That's the comparison to the NBA. Like, whoops. You messed that up. You can still on the team now.
How great would that be, though? Like, like, not in terms of actually being great for the players or anybody in that organization, but from a media standpoint. Like, that would be just insane, Mark. Because, you know, you talk about Vince McMahon and CM Punk. Like, the next day after that happened, we'd see Clipper Darryl do a 2-hour podcast with Coco Banner. Like, nah, man. once Sterling came back, I had to quit. From now on, you can call me Charlotte Hornet Daryl. I'm a ride with Lance Stevenson.
And he's tried the shop of services before, so wouldn't be the first time.
Yeah, Clifford Daryl is way too loyal. I was gonna say he's the Janae Rice in this relationship.
Oh, too soon.
But yeah, man, yeah. I mean, it was kind of an abusive relationship, though.
Too soon.
Not physically, but, you know, trying to dig myself out of this hole, Marcus.
Nah, you're not doing a good job.
So you're not helping. You're supposed to be my tag team partner.
That hot tag? Nah, I just jumped off the apron.
I was like, you just jumped off the apron.
I let go of the rope. I'm out. Walking to the back.
He just hit me with the heel turn.
Yeah.
You're like, he's joined Team Kanoa. My God. I did tag him in a post on Facebook this weekend. He never got back to me, though.
Surprise.
But yeah, because Henry was asking about some compensation. I said, we can't pay him because we don't make any money in this operation, but we will have a holiday Kings of Sport office party with some Little Caesars pizza. And Henry can have as much as he wants, and we'll just like pan to the window, and it'll be raining in LA for some reason. And
it's Alpha raining today.
Ah, it's Tony live.
Yeah.
It never rains in Southern California, my ass. But yeah, we pan to the window, and Alfred to be out in the cold, wishing he had some pizza with a single tear running down his face. So I sent that message, and Henry had a good laugh, but no response from Big Nasty.
We should probably reach out to him sooner than later.
Maybe that's all he wants, Marcus. Maybe he just wants.
That's all we wanted.
But sometimes you gotta be the bigger man, Marcus.
All right.
Sometimes, like would we in this situation, would we be Vince or Punk?
We'll be happy to work with Alfred again. It's best for business.
Damn millennial.
Except we're going to find you when you get back in the loop.
Oh, yeah. Like,
well, Vince find Austin.
Hit him with that Stone Cold fine. Yeah. $600,000. Be the most money this show's ever made.
Yeah.
And on that note, it's time to get on out of here, Marcus. Good show this week. Not nearly as long as last week's episode.
Yeah, the fiance wasn't happy with a 3-hour show. She said less is more.
Hey, it's not our fault, man. You know, holidays you overindulge. So, this week will be a nice tight 90-minute show, somewhere around there.
That's more like it.
So, but last week, you know, we got some feedback. Like, the funny thing about the longer show is it takes people longer to listen.
Mm-hmm.
Like, usually we'll hear, like, if we drop a show on Thursday, we'll usually hear feedback, you know, that weekend. I'm still getting people that are just now, like, listening to the show because it was, like, so, like, man, I like the show, man. It was a good episode, but damn, I had to listen to it in parts.
Yeah, it's all right. We understand.
Hey, as long as you're listening, man, as long as you're listening. So, Marcus, if people want to contact you and give you some words of encouragement after you lose in your fantasy football playoff game this week, where can they reach you?
You can find me on Twitter and Instagram at MarcoWill, MarcoWill.
And you can find me and follow me at N8, MOZAIK, Nate Mosaic on Twitter. Follow the show, CosPod, KOS_POD, CosPod on Twitter, iTunes, Stitcher, rate, review, and share the show with your friends. I want to send a shout out to Place to Be Nation, placetobenation.com. We are down with them. They are down with the king. So get down with placetobenation.com. And finally, Pipe Bomb Radio. It's a weekly show I do with a couple of good guys. And this week, I think we're talking to former WWE referee Jimmy Corderas.
Oh, okay.
So it'll be interesting because I like Jimmy does a lot of the law shows. I've done some of the law shows. And we're friends on Twitter.
Mm-hmm.
But I've never been on a show with Jimmy. He's never been on a show with me. So it's like, we've got some weird satellite law crossover on Pipe Bomb Radio this week.
He seems like a nice guy.
Yeah. Jimmy, I think we're going to talk to him about his book because he's got a book out. Talk about his time in the WWE and then just some random stuff about the life of a referee.
Except he used to work with Arto Cal, so. I don't know. Two points away from working with Arto for that long.
I asked him if he's ever had to be treated by WWE medical staff.
Oh.
And just take a Z-Pack, Jimmy. Walk it off. It's not this bad. That's going to do it for this week. Again, thanks for listening. You can check us out each and every week. Headed towards the holidays, we got some good shows lined up. And we're working on some guests for early next year as well. So you can follow all of that upcoming news and information on Facebook, facebook.com/thekingsofsport. And we appreciate your, what would the word be? Support? Patronage?
Sure.
All the above.
All the above.
So that's it, Marcus. That's it. Anything else before we leave? Anybody else you want to offend?
I haven't offended anyone today.
So you offended one of the former members of the Temple University board of whatever it was.
I offended his character on television. I didn't offend the actual man himself.
That's a good question before we leave. Do we have to now go back and retroactively take away his title from Father's Day when we voted him the best TV dad?
Homer Simpson, look out. You're moving up a spot.
Does the title revert to Homer if we strip the... Is this like a Reggie Bush Heisman situation?
It might be. What about Claire, though? Does she... Guilty by association? She married this man.
Oh, that's a lot of...
Does Claire take a hit?
That's the stuff we got to think about this week. Maybe we'll put something up on Facebook and ask the Kings of Sport Nation.
All right. Poor Claire.
So, for Marcus Vanderberg, that seemed a little bit premature. Let me back on up. There we go. I think we just needed a beat in between. these endings are getting worse.
Hasn't made a Cosby joke there, but go ahead.
So, for Marcus Vandenberg, I am the godfather, Nate Milton. Keep your head up, Cliff.
Don't keep it down. Down got you in trouble.
You've been down with the Kings.
Well, that's all for this week's edition of the Kings of Sport. Be sure to come back next week for an all-new episode. You can leave feedback for the show on Twitter at KOS_POD or via Gmail at thekingsofsport@gmail.com. Don't forget to like and rate us on iTunes and tell a friend. The Kings of Sport is a production of the Mosaic Podcast Network.
Whether you like it or not, he's back. D-A-D-D-Y, that's X. Like I just left.